All right, let's see. I'm assuming we have Dr. Stephen Kuniak on the horn here. Dr. Kuniak, first off, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me. Sorry about the delay.
No worries. Hey, we're happy to have you.
Technology, it's okay.
Yeah.
We're talking about gaming, and when my contact friend up at Lock Haven University gave me this reference, I'm like, ooh, now there's one I'm interested in.
Yep.
Because Dr. Kuniak, this is Scott. I'm kind of old, okay? And my memories of gaming are, again, Asteroids and Pac-Man and Space Invaders and Pong. I remember the original Pong.
Oh, yeah.
When I see what folks are doing with gaming today, I'm stunned. I'm just stunned. And you've done some research and some work on this, not just the gaming part, but maybe the effects of gaming. So we want to talk about some of that stuff. First off, though, let's start from scratch, if you will. Tell us something about yourself. What do you teach at Lock Haven? What is your background and so on? Tell us about you.
Yeah, so like you said, I'm Dr. Steve Kuniak. I'm an assistant professor at Lock Haven, I guess Commonwealth University Lock Haven is now what they want us to call them.
There you go.
I've been in practice for probably about 20 years, maybe a little over 20 years now. I've been a gamer since I was about 4 years old. And so I landed on this topic in my undergrad studies. I'm located out here in the greater Pittsburgh area, geographically. And so I went to St. Vincent College, home of the Pittsburgh Steelers and all that sort of stuff.
Yay.
Summer training camp. Yeah. And so, I heard all of the studies that were going on out there, the news broadcasts out there about gaming being bad for you. And I've been gaming since I could hold a controller, and it didn't seem to line up for me. So I started looking into it, did a little bit of practice with it when I was doing in-home family counseling, things like that. And so I've made it a pretty significant part of my career. But I've been involved in our state counseling association. I was the president of it back in 2020. I've been in practice for a while, and I use gaming as a bridge for mental health services. So kind of what's good in gaming as opposed to what's bad. That makes sense.
Well, I'd like to talk about that in a little bit. Now, a couple things. First off, you mentioned you've been a gamer since the age of four. What was your first game?
Yeah. So remembering back, Asteroids and Pong and all that sort of stuff, okay. That was, I played on my dad and my uncle's Ataris. The first game I remember getting that was kind of my own was on the Sega Master System. I played the old Ghostbusters game that was based on the movie. That, and I think the first game that really kind of like captured me was the original Legend of Zelda. So,
A
little bit of everything.
How old? Okay, now I've never played The Legend of Zelda. I've heard of it, obviously. How old is that? And how many incarnations, because it's still here, how many incarnations have there been of that game?
So, good question. I played it in 1985, 6, something like that. I can really quickly tell you the release, but it was, so 1986 is what it's saying as far as Japanese port and then American. So yeah, it's been around for a while, and there have been a ton of incarnations of it. We just had another one released in the last year.
Amazing.
Now I'm just curious, in your house as a kiddo, did you have brothers and sisters, and what were your parents' rules when it came to gaming? Were there limits on how much time, what time of day, that sort of thing, as you're growing up?
Yeah, so I do have a sister. She's about 2 years younger than me. My parents allowed us to... My sister didn't do as much gaming as I did, by any means, but my parents had kind of the rule that we had to get our homework done, before we could play any other stuff, and that was anything, not just gaming, but And then they generally had a rule that so long as we got up in the morning and, you know, and didn't complain or fuss or anything like that, then they wouldn't really stop us from playing at night. Reasonable to them was probably like 9, maybe 10 o'clock, depending on how old we were. But that was kind of their sort of self-monitoring for us. Now, if we woke up and we were complaining and grumpy and resistant to whatever it is that they wanted to do for the day, then they might, you know, they might pull that back a bit. But, but generally speaking, it wasn't a, you know, you only have X number of hours or you have to stop by such and such time. It's just, you know, keep up doing exactly what you're supposed to be doing as a kid in school and all that sort of stuff and with our extracurriculars and all that. And then the rest of the time was ours so long as we weren't causing an issue.
Yeah. You taking notes here, Jeff? Jeff has an 8-year-old. All right, so you taking notes here? Okay, there you go. Now you know. Now, what do you teach exactly at Lock Haven? What do you do with those folks?
So it's the Clinical Mental Health Counseling Program. It's a master's program, so graduate level. It's fully online, so that's why I get to live out on this part of the state. So some of my colleagues are in central Pennsylvania, north central Pennsylvania, but we have some folks who are as far out as Colorado and New Mexico who teach for us. I teach a lot of the intro level courses, introduction to counseling, theories of counseling, then the skills courses, so basic and advanced skills in counseling, and a smattering of other things as needed. But those are kind of the ones that I feel like I teach every semester. So, I was a practicing counselor for a lot of years before I got into academia, so that's where I like to spend my time with the students.
Now, Doctor, is there a definition of a gamer? In other words, you play so many hours a day or so many hours a week. Is there a rule or a setup like, yep, you're a gamer, no doubt about it. Is there such a thing?
Not really, no. When I did my dissertation, my doctoral dissertation in, I was gathering the data in 2013, I had thought that it was kind of just a rule that if you gamed for about an hour, a week even, you could classify yourself as a gamer. But what I found from that study was so I had a question that I thought was a general qualifying question, like, are you 18, you know, are you 18 years or older? That'll get you in the study or not. I listed, do you identify as a gamer as a question? And I thought that would just be a yes, that, you know, these folks who were taking the study identified as a gamer. But I actually got some folks who identified as no. And so it got me to, but they played a lot. Like, looking at the data for who identified as a gamer or not, they played maybe more than I did or invested more money than I did. And so it got me thinking about it. And so I think that the actual definition is just, it's a self-identification thing. So, like, if you align with gaming, if you see that as a part of your personality and you know, who you are, then you're a gamer. But if not, then you're not. You just play it as it's an activity. A lot of times I do these lectures around the country right now with some colleagues of mine, educating around gaming as a, you know, what's good, what's bad, what do we need to pay attention to, all that sort of stuff. And I use the example of, you know, my mother-in-law likes to play tablet games, you know, like Candy Crush, Words with Friends, things like that. She probably plays more than I play Halo or Call of Duty, but she would never identify herself as a gamer. So it really does depend on how, but, you know, I'm the one who goes out wearing video game-based shirts and, you know, talking about this stuff and playing this stuff. And if you walked into my basement area, you'd see kind of a history of all of my gaming collectibles and things like that all over the place. So it's very much a you know, who you are as a person sort of thing.
Now I'm starting to wonder about myself, because doctor, I don't do any of this. I gave up gaming, of course, during the arcade days, which they don't have arcades anymore. But I'm starting to think, am I the weirdo? I don't do any of this stuff.
Oh, I can answer that.
Yeah, I
can answer that.
Yeah, I bet you could. Yeah, thanks a lot. I mean, are there statistics out there, doctor, on how many people play video games? I'm starting to feel like the oddball here.
Yeah, I mean, the Entertainment Software Association gathers data on this. They're a nonprofit organization that's it's kind of affiliated with the games industry. So their estimates are, in their most recent usage report, about 212.6 million Americans play video games at least an hour a week. So that's a pretty substantial amount. That's why I talk to my students about this, that they probably need to, if they don't, you know, if they don't have any sort of knowledge about this topic or they have a bias about this topic, that maybe they need to educate themselves a little bit, because this is, these folks are going to likely be their clients, you know, 212.6 million. I think another fun stat is that 63% of those folks identify that they game socially, so for their social interaction. So if you think about that, like some of the stigmas out there that gamers isolate, I think that maybe the definition of it should sort of be reframed to maybe they socialize differently. That's not saying good or bad. You know, there's reasons to look at it as, you know, maybe they need to, maybe a person needs to have more in real life social interactions, but there's something about this that creates an amount of safety, you know, for folks. So,
wow. So roughly speaking, those numbers you cited, that's two-thirds of the country. Two-thirds of the country yeah. plays some video games every week. So I am the oddball. I don't do this anymore. I just, holy moly, that's incredible. And now with the internet, most folks, you know, have high-speed internet. Is most gaming now kind of, what would you call it, group gaming, where you're playing against opponents? Or is it still me and the machine? Which is more prevalent?
It's hard to say because both are pretty active. I think that there's a focus in the industry of making games have some amount of social engagement, or making games sort of be always on or always active. There's this model that's popular now called games for service, which is this idea that the game is kind of constantly evolving. So like a game that I play, Destiny, new story content comes out about every 3 or 4 months. You know, culminating in kind of a main story arc that ends, you know, every year to a year and a half. And it's completely socially active. So, like, if you go into a social space before you go into a mission, it's populated with all sorts of folks from all over the world that you can interact with, that you can, you know, jump into a game with. There's what are called LFGs, looking for group apps and posts online where you can find other people to play with if you don't have, you know, a local friend. When I was in college, I had a sort of a gaming clan. We all played together all the time, and we did that into my grad school years. But since we've kind of drifted apart, and so now I have to go to the LFGs to find folks to play with. It's a little of both, but that's not to say that, you know, story-based games are still extremely active. We just had an Xbox developers conference over the weekend, and several of the games have no multiplayer function at all, but they're, still extremely popular, still, you know, it's kind of as diverse as the player base is. You know, all of us have different preferences, all of us have different interests, but it's definitely a dominant form of media. If you want to hear one more fun stat, Microsoft recently acquired Activision, which is the company that creates Call of Duty, but also creates games like Candy Crush. They paid $68.7 billion to acquire that company. It's one of the only entertainment industries that gets hung up in federal and international trade disputes.
Wow. Brave new world, I guess. All right, we're going to take a break. Yeah. Again, our guest is Dr. Stephen Kuniak from, let's be official, Commonwealth University, Lock Haven campus. Yeah, it's still too wordy. When we come back, I want to talk about the effects maybe of gaming, because, Doctor, you've done a lot of research on that. But let's take our break. You're listening to Let's Talk on 98.7 The Fox, and we'll return after this.
Your home for the Goon and Ironhead, exclusively on Sports Radio 98.7
The Fox.
Brothers Pizza in downtown Bellefonte wants to congratulate all the graduating seniors from Bellefonte Area High School and Bald Eagle Area High School. The education of our young people are important for our future growth in the community. When planning for your graduation party, count on Brothers Pizza to take the stress off of your plate and let us do the cooking. Call ahead at 355-5581. That's 355-5581. Brothers Pizza, 102 North Allegheny Street in downtown Bellefonte.
The Farmer's Dotterer on Route 64 celebrates local food, offering raised beef from Dotterer Dairy, Boar's Head Meats, a full deli, fresh subs made to order, and don't forget, check out the daily specials, fresh baked goods, sub platters, meats and cheese trays, and so much more. Lots of local made products, now serving wraps and salads. Stop in today at 6102 Nittany Valley Drive in Mill Hall, or visit them on Facebook. Open Monday through Saturday, 11 to 8, Sunday noon to 5. The Farmer's Dotterer in Mill Hall.
Do you have everything for your next get-together, party, or event?
Did somebody say something about a party?
Let the 64 Beer Store take care of all your party needs with great beverages and snacks. With over 400 beverage offerings, they have all of your beer, wine, and soda choices in one location. They also have kegs for the bigger events, too.
The 64 Beer Store, 1/2 mile north of Interstate 80, Lamar, 6102 Nittany Valley Drive, or call them at 570-726-8687.
Discover a whole new world right here in your own backyard. Happy Valley is where you'll find everything, from beautiful outdoor spaces to fantastic shopping and nightlife to the Central PA Tasting Trail. And you're already here. So plan your staycation and look for insider information at dispatch.happyvalley.com. Remember, whether it's you and your family or out-of-town guests enjoying the things we take for granted, lines are shorter and rates are lower in the middle of the week. Your next adventure begins now at happyvalley.com.
Plan your midweek getaway today and find lodging at happyvalley.com. Explore dining destinations, interesting attractions, historic sites, sports, shopping and boutiques, caves, and the Central PA Tasting Trail. Our hotels, inns, and bed and breakfasts are ready for your visit. Plus, rates and wait times are less during the week. Your adventures can also include hiking trails, biking, geocaching, and walking driving tours, too. Look for insider information at dispatch.happyvalley.com. We're in the center of it all. Plan your adventures today at happyvalley.com.
The State College Spikes are hitting the field all summer long. Enjoy fun, affordable family entertainment as the future of baseball is on display in Happy Valley. Spikes games have something for everyone at the new look Mettler Field at Lobrano Park. From great giveaways to fantastic deals, from special appearances to plenty of fireworks, all the way through September 3rd. For tickets, call 814-272-1711 or get the schedule and buy and download at statecollegespikes.com.
Get going with the Happy Valleys, 98.7
The Fox. Let's talk with Jeff and Scott here on a Wednesday morning. Nice looking Wednesday at that. Good job, Wednesday. So far, so good.
So far, so good.
Some open phone time coming up in the final segment of this morning's show.
Again, we're talking to Dr. Stephen Kuniak from Commonwealth University, Lock Haven campus, talking about gaming and mental health connections. And again, Doctor, I'm feeling like a dinosaur here. Maybe I need to on my phone or something. I need to get a game on there and start doing something. But now you shared some information with me earlier to prepare for the interview, and I guess this is definitely mainstream now because, Doctor, you mentioned that I guess there are some games where people are online and they're playing these games, and commercials pop up, like real commercials. Is that right? Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, so that's not necessarily while playing the game. That's when watching other people play games. So, like, if you load up Twitch.tv, Twitch is a game streaming service. There's some others, too. Twitch is kind of the biggest. Amazon purchased it several years ago. So it's, you know, they've shoveled some money their way. But, you know, if I want to go online and watch someone play Halo or watch someone play you know, Destiny while I'm doing other stuff, I can log on there, and then while the game is playing, there are commercial breaks, just like you'd expect on TV or something like that. And so, yeah, it's, you know, pretty mainstream corporate entities are aware that a large sampling of their consumers are gamers. And so, you know, I think I mentioned to you, I've been watching and I've seen a Bayer aspirin ad pop up. Or an Irish Spring soap ad, and they're not just the traditional ads that you would see on you know, on TV. They're geared towards gamers, so like they're aware of their target audience. So yeah, it's they know where people are, and they know where people are going to spend money, so they're spending money right back. But it's and I guess too, for folks who are curious about why I would watch someone else play a video game, I often compare and contrast to in my area here, every Sunday during football season, folks are going to be gathered around the TV watching adults toss a ball back and forth to each other on TV instead of going out playing it themselves, which is fine. I mean, that's a part of our culture, but this is a part of the gaming culture. You know, it's I would rather watch someone play Rocket League than watch someone maybe play baseball or something like that. So yeah, it's a huge industry. Folks make a living off of that.
Yeah, I am fascinated by that part of it. So when you're watching the gaming, because I am a big sports fan, and I get that comparison completely. Especially, you know, people will make fun of those of us that watch golf. It's like, really, you're gonna watch a guy just hit a ball and walk around? It's like, well, yeah. So yeah, okay. I get it as far as it goes. But are you watching with the idea that you're just entertained by these guys or gals playing these games, or is it that you're trying to learn something, or is it a little bit of both? Which is, you know, I certainly, for young people in sports, I mean, when I take my kiddo to a baseball game, right, we're watching and we're just there for the entertainment value, but also, hey, you're playing catcher, did you see what that catcher did? Is it a combination there where you're trying to learn a little something to maybe use in your gaming, or is it more, yeah, this is just entertaining watching somebody play these other games?
Yeah, I mean, so real quick, you mentioned guys or gals. I think gaming has been thought of as being a mostly male-dominated industry, but the ESA that I mentioned earlier, the stats for that, it's a 53-46% split male-female. As far as, you know, and actually I would hazard to guess that there are more female gamers than are getting picked up there, and certainly we're not gathering enough data on, you know, non-binary gamers and things like that. So it's demographics are kind of across the board. But yeah, when I'm watching to play, so watching people play games, I think, started with YouTube and started with what were called Let's Plays, which were folks who were particularly skilled at a game going on and recording themselves playing something, you know, showing a unique exploit, showing a unique way to get through a game. And then it kind of evolved to just watching those people play. And so I watch because it's entertaining to see the game being played. Sometimes I watch to get a feel for new content that's coming out, you know. I have a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old, and so my amount of gaming has decreased over the years. So I don't have as much time to just sink hours into trying to figure out some new level or trying to figure out some new some new exploit to get through the story. So maybe I watch someone play a little bit of it to get a feel for the new mechanics that are being presented. And then additionally, those folks are broadcasting themselves, and so it's just like watching a radio or TV program. Hearing them talk, hearing them tell their stories is interesting. So, So there's lots of reasons to tune in. And again, it's as diverse as the player base. Additionally, though, there's a chat that runs kind of continuously, so you can interact with those folks who are playing and ask them to do things or ask them questions about what's going on in the game. Folks make millions doing this. I mean, that's not obviously the main, the main number, you know, the average person playing on a Twitch stream. When I have streamed, I get like 6 people in the room. So I'm not making the millions off of that. But some people do. Some people make an entire career out of this.
Unbelievable. That's just crazy. Now, Doctor, you wrote a piece. I love this title. The piece you wrote, "The Cake Is Not a Lie, An Exploration of the Gamer Culture Coping Methods and Resiliency." The Cake Is Not a Lie. Give us the Cliff Notes version. What's in that piece?
Yeah, so "The Cake Is Not a Lie" is a quote from a game. I title all of my articles and stuff like that based on, you know, quotes from pop culture, gaming specifically. But it's from a game called Half-Life. So folks might remember that. And so the Cliff Notes version is I was taking a look at the gamer culture, trying to get mental health descriptive information. You know, who are you? What do you play? How long do you play? What do you get out of this? And so I was able to find that there weren't a ton of correlations. I mean, it was an exploratory study, so I didn't expect to find, you know, like, yes, I'm going to get significant results in this or that or whatever. But I wanted to get a feel for what the general population looks like. I got a really large sample. I took it to a gaming convention and got, you know, 500-some participants in the study after I had to peel back some of the participants. It ended up being, I think, 460-something samples that I could use. You know, gaming conventions are drawing 90 to 100,000 attendees on a regular basis, so that's actually a very small cross-sample. But but I gathered some information that makes a lot of sense to me. So, like, you know, as far as coping strategies, that's kind of the backbone of what we do in mental health services. We want to help people find those coping strategies, find ways to regulate emotions, you know, manage behaviors. And I think, not surprisingly, gamers are really great at problem-focused coping. So gamers are problem solvers. I think sometimes we lose track of how we frame our problems, and so that's something that I do with folks in treatment is, you know, you're really good at solving these puzzles. Maybe think about life a little bit differently. Maybe the problems that are going on in your life are more puzzle-like than you think, and can you work through those problems just like you'd work through it in a game? You know, as far as resiliency levels, which I think is another thing that we look at in mental health services, we want to see if we can figure out a way to make folks more resilient, to deal with life stressors in a way that doesn't really impact them as negatively. You know, resiliency levels in gamers, I think if you watch some of the news stories that are out there, you would think that gamers are not terribly resilient, that they, you know, fall into violent behaviors and things like that. But actually, gamers are average level resilience, the same as anybody else. And so I think that that's noteworthy, though. It's not saying that they're better, it's saying that they're the same. I think that just speaks to, again, that this target population is no different than any other target population. I want to focus on the same sort of stuff. I just maybe want to use a different language when I'm working with my clients who are gamers.
Now, we've talked about mental health issues from time to time here on the show. We've had some other guests. Sure. And we're talking about kids. I'm thinking Gen Z, teenagers, college age, and so on. Allegedly, we keep being told that young people have more mental health issues now than they've had in the past. Now, from all the things, your experience and so on, A, is that true? B, is that somehow connected into what we're talking about here? Because allegedly kids are struggling all over the place. Is that accurate or not? What do you think there?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there are some aspects of society that make us struggle a little bit more, or maybe in different ways than we used to in the past. But I also think that it's kind of the chicken or the egg argument. Like, it's hard to know if it's that there are more problems going on now or if we're more aware of problems. And so we can put a label on them and we can communicate with about them a little bit better. You know, I think about growing up as a young male, I got a lot of messages about, you know, we don't cry, we don't talk about things, we don't, you know, we muscle on, we, you know, all of that. And so that's kind of counter to the narrative of share about what's going on in your life, you know, let go of some of those burdens, talk about those with someone else. And so I think that as societally, we've done a better job, not a perfect job, but a better job of reducing the stigma around talking about mental health needs. And so lo and behold, what we're finding is as people talk about their mental health needs, there are more mental health needs. I don't know that those are new. I think that they maybe are different, and I think that we're hearing about them more. And maybe in some cases, new stuff is cropping up. But I think, you know, as we ask folks to talk more about what's going on in their lives, they are. And then we're finding all of this new stuff. I don't know, chicken or the egg, but there's certainly a lot of stuff to work with out there. There's certainly an awareness that there's a mental health crisis. I've heard that term used, and I'd probably say that it's true. You know, we need to come up with new approaches, I think, to deal with that. So this is my sort of humble offering to that.
So let me loop back around then. From your knowledge, opinion, experience, whatever, could gaming somehow be part of the solution here? If there's young people and they're maybe struggling more or it's recognized more, do you think gaming somehow, I don't know, maybe not the shoot 'em up games, but somehow gaming could be part of the solution to help young people in these situations?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's going to work for everyone. I always kind of caution that. I don't think that this is sort of a a golden egg sort of phenomenon. But I do think it's going to be helpful for a number of folks in the population. And I think any new gain is better than nothing. I use gaming when I have a client who I know is a gamer. I use gaming as a way to kind of create metaphors. So the stories in games are really deep, really rich, and maybe that's surprising to folks to know. You know, if you're used to just kind of Mario, and no offense to Mario because he has some great stories too, but if you're used to Mario just kind of crushing mushrooms and kicking turtle shells, you may not recognize these deeper emotional connections that get created through the stories in games. Thinking about a game called Mass Effect, there were three games that were produced in the original Mass Effect trilogy that spanned over the course of almost 10 years. And so you developed a connection to the characters and the stories that you were creating in that game. The decisions that you made had consequences. So decisions that you made in Mass Effect 1 informed things that were going on in Mass Effect 3. And so there's a character that you've been working with in the game for some time that you've seen them mature in the game, and then you have to order them to save this population, which, spoiler alert, I guess, involves them having to sacrifice themselves. And they choose to do that, but you are the one who puts them in that scenario. That's a tearjerker moment for folks. And so being able to talk about that in a counseling session and get to some of those emotions that might be a little bit riskier for someone to talk about when they're talking about themselves, but to talk about it in the game, it's a little bit safer. And that's not just games. I mean, I think if you watch any movie, I think back to Saving Private Ryan or Schindler's List or something like that. Those are tearjerker movies. There are tearjerker video games too. And so I think... doesn't it make sense that I'm passively watching the movie and I have an emotional reaction to it? Doesn't it make sense that I would also have an emotional reaction, maybe even more so, to a game that I'm actively engaging with? And there are games that aren't even just, I think we get hung up on these AAA blockbusters because that's what we see all over the place, but there are games like That Dragon Cancer is a game that I bring up a lot. It's a little bit older, but it's about two parents going through the, coping with their child who's been diagnosed with terminal cancer. And that was created by a game development team of two parents who had a child who was diagnosed with terminal cancer. And so they have you kind of go through their experience. That's an extremely emotionally charged game. It won quite a lot of awards. But you aren't going to hear about that as much because that's not one of the big AAA titles that folks talk about. But it could be a very triggering game, but it could also be a very, very sort of cathartic process for someone. So.
Wow. This has really gotten deep. This is way beyond Pong. Holy moly. Doctor, we're out of time, but I tell you what, we appreciate the conversation. Thank you very much. And
sure.
And good luck with Commonwealth University Lock Haven campus. Whoosh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Appreciate
Thank
your time.
You. Thank you.
Appreciate your time. Thank you.